Namaste and welcome to the first episode of Encyclopedia of Video Games. This is Ace.
And I'm Yuga, and in today's podcast we're going to talk about The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past.
But first, here's some news. So, what's happening? We are two Italian guys, two brothers, and we are here to talk about video games. We have started in 2019 a project, and we are trying to do it in English as well for a bigger audience.
But we started a long ago, when we were little childs, recording on tape our DJ session with the video game music and the review of some video games. So now we're presenting a full project. We made over 100 episodes in Italian, now we're challenging ourselves speaking in English.
So sorry if our accent is a bit thick, but we are working on it, and nevertheless Mario and Luigi are the two Italian most famous video game guys.
For sure, we are not trying to be Italian stereotypes. We're trying to sound like normal people. But obviously it would be an ongoing task, so this is our first episode. We hope you enjoy it.
We chose The Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past, because it's a bridge between the Italian portion of this podcast, which is called Enciclopedia dei Videogiochi, and this podcast, because the last one that we did was on Ocarina of Time, and this one is on A Link to the Past. So the two Zelda games that have two different worlds colliding.
Before starting this brand new project, this brand new episode, we would like to listen to a piece of music from the soundtrack of A Link to the Past. Today's video game is A Legend of Zelda, A Link to the Past, a game from 1991 developed and published by the legendary Nintendo. And it's the first and only Legend of Zelda title from the SNES, but later it's been ported to the Game Boy Advance. And it's an adventure game, maybe the adventure game, legendary adventure game for this great IP.
In 1991, Zelda had a sort of a crisis, because Zelda 1 was a top-down adventure open world. The sequel, Zelda 2 Adventures of Link, was a side-scrolling platformer with adventure elements. And then Zelda 3 comes back to the origin with top-down adventure game. But the very tricky part was that story was involved in it. So it's not as open as the first one, or the second one as well, but as a linear story progression all over the game.
One of the many fun facts about the development of this game is it began on the NES, the first Nintendo console, but the technology, the innovation this game will bring made necessary to upgrade the system, so it will be published for the SNES on a cartridge that was double the size the average cartridge of the system, because the graphics, the music, the amount of data needed for this game was very huge. Another thing was that Miyamoto wanted a game more like the Final Fantasy series. Not just one protagonist, but a party, a group, like in RPGs, and so like Final Fantasy. But the idea was scrapped to return to the original format of the franchise.
The bigger size of the cartridge allowed Koji Kondo to produce a more rich music with more channels, interactive music with the environment, especially one of the first first songs that we hear in the game is a music mixed with the sound of the rain in the background. So you have a sense of urgency and the rain that fills the environment. So Kondo was really great in mixing those two type of music together, a score music with a thematic music. This game originally was published in Japan and then ported in North America and Europe, but our country, Italy, didn't receive a copy in Italian translated, so we had to play the game in English, and only in 2001 an Italian translation made by our friends from Sadness City was completed as a ROM hack, so we can finally experience the game in our native language.
It's interesting to talk about the localization of Zelda Link to the Past, because from the original Japanese translation, the American one was altered, because the American portion of Nintendo had some guidelines. There were removed religious symbols like the Ankh or the Sanctuary or even the title Triforce of the Gods. So it was made A Link to the Past, which I think is more fitting to the story arc of this game.
These Christian references are seen in the original Legend of Zelda on the shield. You can see the cross. It's a Christian cross. And also on the manuals, you can see it. This type of censor gave us a funny wordplay on the word Link, which is fitting and also interesting.
Funny to censor some religious content, because we are child that playing this game, so we don't care. We didn't care about religion stuff. It's for the adults, from the parents. So I really think it was funny, because we really don't care about that.
This Christianity censorship is pretty strange, because if they wanted to remove every single religious references, they would have to mirror the whole game, because Link is left-handed, as we know in this game, the first one, and also in Ocarina of Time, until Twilight Princess, I think, because it was a controller issue that Link switched and at that time. But the left hand for Christian people is the hand of the devil. So if they really wanted to censor everything, they would have to mirror the whole game. Another thing about Zelda 3, it's its development, because Zelda 1 was a first, so you had nothing to compare with. The second one was like a Gaiden, they say in Japan, so a completely different type of game. And then the third one is the really big installment that cement the whole franchise. It's the same thing with the Fire Emblem franchise, because the first one started it all. The second one was called Gaiden, and it's completely different, sharing only some similarities. And the third one was a remake of the first one on the Super Nintendo, and it cemented the whole legacy.
In fact, A Link to the Past is often considered the best Zelda game, if not the best video game in history, and for the SNES. So, before we dive in the story and the legacy of A Link to the Past, let's listen to another piece from the soundtrack. We are in the whimsical land of Hyrule, a world created by three goddesses which before leaving decided to leave an object of power, a gift to the people living in Hyrule, which is the legendary Triforce. They lived in another side of the planet called the Sacred Land, and everybody who reached to the Triforce was granted a wish, infinite power and a good wish or a evil wish, based based on the type of person, the type of warrior, of adventurer who will find the Triforce. In this case, in Link to the Past, the Triforce is discovered by Ganondorf, the King of Thieves that uses his evil wish, his evil power, to take over the Sacred Land, renaming it the Dark World, and then proceed to obtain, to try to obtain the classic evil plan everybody does, and that obviously is world domination. And then war happens. Because why not? War happens. Ganondorf is winning, but the Seven Sages manage to seal Ganondorf in the Dark World, never to return again. Or is it?
That's a crazy intro, because when we compare it with the two previous installments, we're conditioned by the two previous games on a very simple story. Just take the sword and kill the baddie. And this is completely different. It's a lore storytelling type of game, and it serves as an intro for the Ocarina of Time sequel, because that was a roundabout prequel, but the timeline, as we know, of Zelda is all over the place. This type of introduction, but the story starts in a small house. We have the protagonist, which is called Link, but we can name it as we wish, that gets contacted by Zelda's telekinetic power, and we have to save her. Link awakens, finds his uncle, who lives with him, follows his uncle to the castle, where his adventure begins.
I found this initial part with the uncle very strange for fantasy game targeted for child, because it's whimsical, it's an adventure, a light story. But we begin with the death of our uncle, which give us the sword and shield, the famous sword and shield of Link, and Link just progress forward. I found this scene very unsettling, because it's a very serious thematic, but it's treated like very lightly, differently from the first game where a sage give us the sword. This time we have a parent that dies, and we have to continue his mission. So that's bravery, yes. But I found it very strange, very unsettling. Yes, the uncle is a minor character in the story, but it's really strange for a kid's game, you know.
This part serves as a tutorial, but it's not a told story, but it's just with gameplay. Because when you approach the uncle, Zelda just says there's a secret passage hidden somewhere around the castle. You don't have any weapon to fight the guards. There are evil guards, because they are under control of this mage that we will know in a short bit. But we can explore the outskirts of the castle, find the secret passage, and then when we receive the sword from our uncle, he says he teaches us the secret move for the spinning attack. And then we can explore. And that's the nice thing about this game. You don't have to follow a certain path, but you can explore. The first room is a sideway room, when you can, if you explore that room, you can find the lamp, which is the first item that you obtain, and it's crucial for the later part of this dungeon.
For a gameplay standpoint, we can already see the innovation. In the previous games, Link basically thrust forward with the sword. In this case, we can slash sideways with the sword, and we have the secret move, the spinning move. So already a leap forward in the gameplay and innovation in storytelling with the tutorial dungeon. We find, finally, Princess Zelda, and she tells us the plot of the game, the really plot of the game. That is, the evil wizard Haganim has kidnapped the six maidens, descendants of the seven sages. The seven maiden is obviously Zelda, and it's trying to send them in the dark world to break the seal that imprisoned Ganondorf, so that he can again try to conquest Hyrule, and it's our job to stop him now.
But we'd freed Zelda, and we can escape from the first dungeon through another hidden passage, and find us in the sanctuary with a priest in it that tells the next step in our quest. So as you can see, it's a pretty linear game so far. This priest tells us to go to Kakariko village to talk to Sahasrara, which is the elder of the village. But when we go to Kakariko village, everyone thinks that we kidnap Zelda from the castle, and so you have to choose which part of the village to talk to, and they say that Sahasrara is elsewhere, so you have to traverse the whole map to get to him.
And he tells us the next big quest of the game. In our state we cannot defeat Hagenim because it's too powerful, but there is one sacred weapon that can. It's the legendary Master Sword, hidden in the middle of the forest of Hyrule. But before we can wield this legendary weapon, we have to retrieve three magic pendants of courage, wisdom and power. So the next goal is to adventure through the dungeons where the pendants are located, battle hordes of monsters, soldiers, retrieve new objects like the arrows, the boomerang and all the items that are staples to this game. This game is full of items, objects, equipment, also secret equipment. We can finish the game without collecting all of it, but obtaining all the items, all the secret items, grants us the power to finish the game easily. Obviously.
You have these objects, but also the pieces of hearts that are scattered all over the map. There are two maps in the game. One is the light world that we traverse finding those three pendants. And then when we fight finally Hagenim with the Master Sword that we retrieved from the Lost Woods, Hagenim sends us to the dark world, which is a completely different map with harder enemies. And you have to get all the pieces of heart to have a lot of health to face them.
This part of the story is told in-game, when we retrieve the Master Sword, like an adventure movie, an action movie, we are called again telepathically, because the guards kidnap again Princess Zelda, kills the sage, so another death in a child's game, and we have to run literally to Hagenim into the castle, but we are too late. He managed to send Princess Zelda, the seventh maiden, to the Dark World, and take us with him after that battle. So now, with the help of the other people of the Dark World, we know another truth. The seven maidens have to be rescued to access the pyramid, the tower, the evil tower, the evil pyramid, where Ganon and Hagenim are. So our quest is similar to the one before, but it's expanded. Now we have seven dungeons and more to retrieve the maidens, the objects, and also the side quests. And here, the gameplay really shines, because we, with the magic mirror, have a sense of puzzle game, because we have to shift through the dark and the light world.
Once we have been sent to the dark world, the game opens up with these seven dungeons, and the eighth one being the last one, Ganon Castle. The game was a lot criticized, because what you see in the map, you see all these dungeons labeled with numbers. So the game is not open world. It's pretty linear, because it has to follow the story, and the first item grants you access to the second dungeon and so on. You can skip some of them, you can rearrange them, maybe like the first one, second one, then fourth one, and then third one, and so on, but you can't get to the seventh one without the item from the other six, Turtle Rock, which is the last one. It's pretty difficult, and you have to get all of the items to access all of the parts of this dungeon. This type of item-based gates is a core mechanic of the Metroidvania genre, and that's why we can say that Zelda is like a precursor of this type of game.
On our quest to find all the equipment necessary to progress in the game, I like to talk about a little funny scene. We find a fountain, a pool inside the cavern, and we can do anything with it, but we can throw inside our object. We can, for example, throw our shield, and then a fairy comes out of the pool, ask if we throw the shield, the object, in the pool, we have to choose to lie or tell the truth. And if we tell the truth, the fairy will grant us an upgrade of the item we thrown. So we can upgrade the shield, the arrows, the boomerang, and even the Master Sword, obtaining the golden sword, which is the most powerful weapon in the game. game. Once we retrieve all the seven maidens, we can use their power to unlock the final dungeon, the final tower, where Hagenem is waiting for us, but now we're prepared.
This dungeon is full of enemies, full of bosses as well, because every dungeon has a final boss, and in this dungeon we encounter the three bosses from the three Light World dungeons, and they are pretty easy now because we are fully equipped. And when we find the last room of this dungeon, we can finally fight Hagenem in his final form that splits into three copies. When we kill him, that's another plot twist, the spirit of Ganon rises from Hagenem's body and the final fight begins.
In this case, in this fight, we see the true form of Ganondorf, which is that of the demon lord Ganon, a boar-like warrior, demon, enemy that has corrupted the original Ganondorf that was more humanoid, as we see in games like Ocarina of Time. And in this case, he's armed with his trident, and it's a really difficult fight battle, unless you are a speedrunner. In this case, you can kill him really easily, but it's a really hard fight that concludes the game, because once we defeat Ganon, we can access the secret chamber where the Triforce lies. And so we can make our wish a good wish, because Link is a good man, it's a good warrior. So, and he decides to restore the Dark World, which returns the Sacred Land, and the Hyrule, rising from the dead, his uncle, the sage, and all who has perished from Hagenem Reign of Terror and Ganon Reign of Terror. So a happy ending with all NPCs alive, as we see in the title credits. In the final credits, we see like a story, a cartoon, a fantasy cartoon, where all the characters we meet during the game continue their lives.
The last thing to do is to put the sword back, because it served its purpose. So Link just does it. He goes to the Lost Woods and seals again the power of the sword on its rock, on its resting place, never to be drawn again.
Or is it? Legend of Zelda: A Link to the Past, a really legendary game we had the honor to choose for our first English version of this podcast. And now we usually gave the game we talk about a symbolic rating. In this case, we choose to begin with a very great game, so I give this a 10 boomerangs out of 10. It's a really epic game. I remember in 1981, when it first came out, I played the English version. It was a magic adventure, and it was a learning experience too, because I learned to comprehend English, to read in English. It was a hard task, but I carry this game in my heart. It's really colorful, like the SNES showed us through the years. A story, the importance of the lore of a Zelda game never seen since this title. The gameplay is very fluid. There are no slowdowns, there's no scrolling between screens, but the action, it's very crisp and really, for the time, a game for the ages. And what do you think about it, Ace?
I give it a 10 bombs out of 10, because bombs are one of my favorite items in the game. When I played this game, after I played the first one, I was in a later stage of my life, so I didn't play in 1991, but later. The first one was a great game, but it lacks hints on the secrets, because the secrets are everywhere. You couldn't find it without a guide or just guessing. This game is chock full of things to do, and a lot of places where you can see cracks when you can bomb it, and then you think about what I can do with this obstacle. You have the boulders that are white boulders that you can lift when you got the power glove, but then you find the black rocks, the black boulders, and you think about I have to upgrade my gloves to reach them. So you have all of these thoughts in your mind that you can be more powerful, and throughout the whole story I can think about all the possibilities of with the when I got the flippers as well, because Link can't swim at the start of the game, but when you have the flippers you can pretty much go everywhere. And that's a nice thing about exploring is rewarded with something, with items, with secrets, with more power, more magic, more knowledge as well. And that's a thing about the Triforce, I think, because the Triforce is courage that you need to discover the world, it's wisdom because you gain the wisdom when you discover the world, and it's power because you have the items to use to defeat evil. And that's a nice thing, and we chose this game because it's in our hearts. We played in two different times because we are brothers, we are not twins, we have different age, and I think it's a great game to also show the capability of the Super Nintendo, as well as the pixel art, which is timeless, and it's often used as a base on the modern pixel art with the palette but also the resolution. I think it's a really, really important game for the genre and also for the medium overall.
Another reason this game is timeless, it's because it's played today. To this day, people play A Link to the Past, speedrunners, marathons online, live events, where the game is being modded, so you can randomize items, granting a different play, a different run every time, with different bosses, with different palettes, different artwork. So it's a game that defines its time, but continues to define the genre, and it's inspiring programmers, like Ace said before, with the new games, with its art style. So it's really a game I think will be played near to forever at this time.
So we are here at the conclusion of this first episode. We are tired because it's our first experience in doing this in English. As we said before, we are curating another podcast, which is called Enciclopedia dei Videogiochi, over 100 episodes in Italian, and we are trying this new challenge for us. I think it's a refreshing experience for us, so we would like to hear from you. You can write us on Spotify, you can find a Q&A and you can answer to that question, as well as you can can send us a voice clip. Just go to encyclopediadevideogiochi.it. You can find the link in the description, of course, where you can just send us whatever you want. Also, if you want to give us any advice on our pronunciation or the next game to be featured in our podcast.
So we hope you enjoy, you liked our first try at the English podcasting, and so we will hear you on the next episode of the Encyclopedia of Video Games.
This is Ace.
I am Yuga.
Namaste and be brave. Ha ha ha.